and welcome to episode 292 of the Awesome Comics Podcast, the place where the small press makes one hell of a big noise. I'm Vince Hunt, writer of Murder Road, and joining me as always is the creator of the webcomic Vanguard, Dan Butcher.
Hello.
And the writer of your wildest dreams and scariest nightmares is Tony Esmond.
And erotica. Hello.
Why do you have to write that bit?
I like to write erotica. It's just personal use.
Yeah. Yes. Hello, everyone. We're very excited because we just had a wonderful
chat.
We're a
bit giddy, aren't we?
We are giddy. Yes. Giddy on comics talk after the interview we just did. I don't want to call them interviews because they're more like just chats with...
Fireside chats.
Yeah, fireside chats. That's what we should... because we're all wearing like silk robes when we do this show, aren't we?
Yeah, pipes.
And drinking port.
We look like the writers out of the Mighty Boosh. You remember when he decides he's a writer and goes to that thing, and there's that bloke who's got a walnut for a head.
Yep. I mean, this show is very much like the Mighty Boosh.
But it's
also full of mighty good comics. Yes, and we are talking to Xander Cannon this week, the creator of a lot of our listeners, one of their favourite comics, Kaiju Max. And you are in for a treat.
Yep.
But do you know where else you can
get a treat?
Yeah. Comic House.
It's Comic House, our lovely sponsor, Comic House. Yes. We love them. We talk about them every week, and they are an indie comic marketplace in the UK with a difference, because they love indie just as much as the rest of us. If you go on comichouse.com, there's a huge selection of titles on the database. If you self-publish, you can list your book on there and start selling straight away. But they also have an app, a digital app, that we're shouting about all the time. It's basically like Netflix for comics. I'm just going to lean into that phrase now. It's only taken me a couple of hundred episodes, but I think I'm just going to own it. It's like Netflix for comics. Basically, only £3 a month, which is less than a fairly standard digital comic. You get access to an enormous library of digital indie comics. And it's been updated all the time. What stuff is on there at the moment, Dan?
We've got Blood Brothers, Volume 1. That Comic Smell, Volume 1, Issue 1.
Oh, is it on there already? Oh, nice.
Yeah, it's on there. Stuff. Nice one.
Yeah.
We've got Drips, Volume 1.
I ordered that yesterday.
This one, Drips, Volume 1. We've got the 77, Issue 1 is 2, a new retro anthology. And this one looks interesting. It's Gluck and Bo, Volume 1. Gluck and Bo meet an Angel of Death. And all that and more.
I mean, when you say that title, I think it's pretty funny, family-friendly, you know, Toe Jam and Earl kind of thing. But then you say, meet the Angel of Death, and I think, what is this?
It's a bit like that buddy cop movie I came up with earlier called Sinew and Flaps.
It's true, but we're not going to go into that right now.
I'll give you the story synopsis for Gluck and Bo.
Yep.
Gluck and Bo are just a couple of regular Joes. Hauling cargo from the outreaches of the galaxy. You see a lot of strange things in space, but something about this trip is different, way different. So there you go.
Yeah, sounds right.
Oh, I thought you were going to tell me why it was different.
Yeah, that was a bit of a brief summary, actually.
Yeah. Do you know what?
I think I need more.
I'll tell you the best way to do it is just to go on Comic House
And have a read of it.
And have a read of it.
Yeah.
And there's a 14-day free trial, so you can dive in headfirst into the amazing world of indie comics that we talk about every week. And a lot of the people we talk to, or like, there's new creators adding their stuff all the time. So go forth and check it out, people.
Can I just say that was slick as fuck?
It's good, isn't it?
That's how we do it. Yeah,
it's almost like we've been doing this for years.
See, it's almost 200. I think we came on board with them at episode 100, didn't we? And it's like, 292 now or something? Yeah, I know.
We promise. No, actually, we better not promise anything, knowing this show. By 300, maybe we'll make it through a sponsorship ad, but we can't promise anything. Anyway, go to comichouse.com to find out more. And there you go, folks. Well, we're in such a good mood after a lovely comic talk.
You are excited. Yeah. I've been ordering non-stop books while we were doing the interview with him.
I mean, it must be very dangerous for you, Tony, whenever we speak to any of our guests, because you just order everything.
I know. I get very excited. I don't know.
You think you're going to get some DVDs or Blu-rays off the back of
this
one? Yes,
well, I know. He gave me some recommendations. He's like my dealer, I've decided, Xander.
Yeah.
I think one of the characters we're going to talk about that I remember back in the 90s when like the manga stuff was like really coming to prominence in the UK, you know, they did that manga video label And they did release some, tried to release like an Ultraman film through that. Obviously, it didn't take, well, it might have taken, but it's weird because there's so much other stuff like it that's gone fucking nuts in the UK, but Ultraman's never really kind of managed to get a foothold.
I've got a Kamen Rider annual from the 90s.
Okay.
Or maybe the late 80s, yeah. Yeah, do you remember I got that big load of annuals in? I think it was in there. Yeah.
Well, they did like the a dub, didn't they? They called Saban. Oh no. The US ones that do Power Rangers, essentially they buy the episodes, chop them up, add the Western stuff into it, and then release it as like a new product. And they did one with Kamen Rider. It was like Kamen Rider Black, which I think is like, this is pulling this out of thin air. I think it's like the fifth, sixth, or seventh season of it, and retooled it for like the Western audiences.
Okay.
Blimey, Dan.
I can remember seeing some of the early ones where it's like, a real 70s, and all the actors and actresses are bopping around like in flares and stuff, and it's great. It's such a nice
time period.
Let's not waste any time, shall we, because like there's going to be lots of otherwise we'll just spoil what we're going to talk about, because you're going to be adding to your wish list, you're going to be buying more comics or Blu-rays or whatever it is, and it's all because of this fantastic chat with the creator of Kaiju, Max Xander Cannon. Right, this week we're joined by an artist and creator with credits such as Replacement God, Heck, Smacks, and his epic giant monster prison drama, Kaiju Max. That's a collection of words I didn't think I'd say. But it's our pleasure to welcome Xander Cannon to the show. Hello, sir.
Hi, thanks for having me.
Our pleasure, man. Fans.
Very big fans, as are many people of the book. And for those who don't know about the book, well, we'll get into that in just a second. And considering we're on the precipice of the world going giant monster mad at the moment, because, like, I don't know, there's some giant lizard and a giant monkey about to fight somewhere.
Oh, I saw the internet going on about that, as it usually does.
Oh, I am all
it's
about
a
it.
Little art film, sounds
yeah,
like.
just a little art film, you know. I don't know if anyone will watch it, but I'll probably check it out. I'm hugely excited. But it seems like it's kismet. It's meant to be that we're going to talk to you right now, Xander, with your book. So let's kick off with not the elevator pitch as such, but for those who are unaware of what Kaiju Max is, and one of the reasons this show exists is for people to discover books like this, just give us the short sort of summation of what is Kaiju Max.
Well, when I created it, I wanted to just have the most basic sort of, you know, log line, you know, when you're pitching something, which is to say, you know, it's monsters in prison. And so to expand on it more, it's just like, well, what if Godzilla went to prison and then there were gangs of, you know, lizard monsters and robot monsters and cryptid monsters and this monsters, and they would form gangs and they would deal drugs and they would murder each other, and they're, you know, you could just take all the premise of Oz or Orange is the New Black or any other sort of, you know, amoral prison drama and then just kind of paint it with monster movie stuff, especially like 60s super silly monster movie stuff where, like, you know, weird stuff like Godzilla sliding on his tail or dancing, that kind of stuff. You know, that was my goal.
I mean, that's a pretty big mashup, isn't it, really, to merge those two things. That's quite a... That's
a little bit of Mechagodzilla as well. One of my favourites. Yeah.
It's such a great, like, you kind of explain that if you give the pitch for it and people are kind of... Whoever I've told it to, they're invested pretty much straight away because it fires up the imagination of kind of having an island prison for these massive kaiju monsters.
Well, it's like an inflection point for everybody you tell because they're either like... Oh no, I don't think I'm going to like that at all. Or they're like, that's extremely up my alley. So I think that that's nice because you can kind of, you know, people don't really go like, I don't know, maybe if it's good. Like they're either on board or not.
I think I pretty much read the people I tell that concept to beforehand, whether they're going to like it or not. Like, if I told my wife, she wouldn't be interested in that. But
it's like, well, there's always like people in my neighborhood who are sort of like have like real jobs and are like kind of like real adults and stuff, and they're like, what's your latest book about? And I tell them, they'd be like, oh, okay, yeah, all right, that sounds real interesting, you know. And then they're like, I'm gonna give that guy a couple weeks before I talk to him again. Take a step back.
So the sort of person who says to you, what do you do first, look at the pictures or read first? What do you do when you read a comic? Those sort of people.
Me? They annoy me. Yeah. Oh yeah.
You forget, how do you come up with your ideas?
See, now everybody asks that question, but I actually love it. I love talking about how I come up with my ideas, because I'm like, because usually I don't think about it until someone asks me the question. I'm like, oh yeah, you know, I guess I thought of it this way, you know. So
we had Brendan McCarthy on, and we avoided asking him that, and he said, no, please ask me that question, didn't he? Do you remember? It's a bit of a go-to for some podcasts, isn't it? But we sort of avoid it, but he was really into it. Yeah.
We'll circle back to that later after we do, we do a little bit of Kaiju Max and then like move on to some writing stuff. But Xander, I was listening or reading something you put, and you said that the concept behind Kaiju Max was like based on Ultraman rather than Kaiju monsters. Is that how it came about?
Yeah, because, well, I mean, here the reason was, and this is like when my son was little, my son is Korean. And so when he was little, we wanted to have him have, you know, he liked all the usual cartoons and stuff. But then I thought it'd be nice to have him have something to watch that had an Asian cast or an Asian lead, especially a hero. And so I just ran across a DVD set of Ultraman, because I'm in Minneapolis, and there's Mill Creek Entertainment has the rights for Ultraman in the U.S. And so there was like a cheap DVD set of like the 66 Ultraman, and of course we'd always watch Godzilla and you know, I always like weird stuff, and so I had him watch it with me. But when we got Ultraman, it was threaded the needle perfectly, because it's totally for kids. There's never anything that's too violent. And it was so absurd, and it was, you know, it was nice and quick, like 30 minute episodes, and so they would get to the fighting fast, like there was no 45 minute run up. And so he loved it. I mean, he just loved it. So he's this little two-year-old, and he's giving me the little specium beam, like crossed hands. You know, the Ultraman crosses his hands.
Oh, yeah.
Beam at people. Yeah. So that's how we would say, like when I would drop him off at daycare or school, he would give me that little beam, and I'd give him it back. Is that a cultural thing? Like they would, like the people at daycare would be like, is that a cultural thing? And I'm like, not really, no.
Do you like monsters? Yeah.
That character isn't culture. No, it's not.
That character isn't so big in the UK, I don't think. I could be completely
right.
Way out of turn. But
it's been discovered a bit more recently, isn't it? I think.
Yeah. Nor is the US. I mean, that DVD set was sort of kismet, you know, that I had even found it at all. And I mean, I was aware of it, sort of. But I also lived in Japan for a couple of years. So I was aware of a lot of like sort of more obscure stuff. But yeah, Ultraman. But so anyway, Ultraman. It was aimed younger. It was sillier. It was kind of cheaper. You know, like the suits of the monsters. You're like, yeah, that was pretty obviously just like a bunch of stuff they threw together, or a recycled Godzilla suit with a little fringe, or like that. You know?
Has his design really changed over the years, Ultraman? Because I saw recently there's a trailer. Is it Shin Ultraman or something? You know, like it was Shin.
Oh, is there?
Yeah, yeah, there's a new version.
There's a Marvel comic as well, isn't there now?
And
the amazing thing about Ultraman and Kamen Rider is the same sort of thing, where they would do 60 some episodes in like 1966 or whatever. They just did a ton of episodes, and then the next year they just reboot it. Like the next year was Ultra 7, and it was in 1967, and so it's a different. It's basically a different hero, but in the same universe. So he's from the same like planet, but it's different guy, different support team, different everything. So they just keep rebooting it, and they've done that for 50 years. And it's crazy, but it has this huge effect where they're like, we need to do a new Ultraman movie in 2009. And so we're going to like go find the actors that played Ultraman in Ultra 7, you know, these 70-year-old guys, and have them be like these Yoda-like sort of wise old Ultraman guys. Anyway. It's great because it's kind of like what people are starting to do with like Marvel or DC TV shows and stuff, where they'd be like, oh, let's bring back, you know, the actor who played Superman in this, or the actor, you know, let's bring back Michael Keaton to play Batman or whatever. But they do it sort of in universe without having to like kind of do a lot of mental gymnastics like the like American superheroes do.
Oh no. That's so awesome. So I know they do that with like the Super Sentai stuff, like reinvention, and then bring back old stars, and that's great because it brings back the old fans, and also the new fans are invested in it. It's a real kind of classic fan service. It's got to be.
This makes me want to go and buy that DVD set now. I'm desperate to find it. As soon as we finish, I'm going to be looking it up on Amazon. I've got to be honest with you. Yeah.
Well, and the funny thing is, in the recent times, they've made Blu-rays of it, and of course, it's way better. But they don't have the dub track on it, right. You know. And I know that, like, you know, and I'm kind of a purist too. But like, when you're wanting to watch a monster movie, who needs subtitles? Like, I don't need to know the nuances of the Japanese.
There's a charm,
like,
isn't there, to some of that sort of dubbing.
Plus, if you're drawing all the time, you don't want to put your head up to read the subtitles every few minutes. Do you?
Yeah, when people are like, oh, do you watch subtitles or dubs on monster movies? And it's like, are you kidding me? Like, sounds the same in Japanese and English.
Just before the show, you mentioned a question I'll bring up here. Like, in Kaiju Max, the kind of, there's scenes of, like, real violence and, like, it runs the whole gamut, but the kind of the art style really belies that, like, hard edge of it. And you said you came into the Oni Press, the publishers, and they wanted to talk to you about the book you was putting out.
I mean the book was always what it was, but but early on it was pitched as a comedy, you know, like, and I was always a little bit is it really, but you know, and then but then I did always kind of think of it as being like, oh, it's kind of PG-13, but they really kind of had to say, like, you know, you open season 3 with like a massacre, like just blood on the walls and everything. Like, I really think it's time for us to have a talk about, you know, a mature readers thing at least.
Yeah, because like, so, in the first book, there's like the main character, there's like a rape allegory when they're in the shower under the mountain, and he gets attacked.
Yeah, and I feel kind of ambivalent about that. Like, you know, there's a lot of, recently I've been sort of in the process of talking with people about the possibility of making it into a TV show or that kind of stuff, or some other media. And I'm, you know, and it's like that scene, it's like, I'll stand by it. It's fits into what I created, but I am not happy. I'm not really happy about it. Like, because it's so gruesome. And I kind of realized kind of halfway through, I was like, oh God, this is dark. And so I actually changed the tone of what was going to come after to be a lot, to dwell on it more.
Okay. Yeah, interesting.
But even so, I just, you know, but even so, it's, you know, the book at that time was still a little tongue in cheek, and it hadn't kind of grown into the gruesomeness and sort of downbeatness that it later did. Anyway, so I guess I'll just go on the record and say, like, I'm on the fence about that whole thing.
I mean, it's
at least you thought about it. That's the point.
I think every series, like the creators, they're learning with every issue and every story arc and everything, aren't they? Like,
well, and I really thought, like, oh well, the fact that it was, you know, pretty abstracted, and at least to me, like, well, I'm stealing a moment from a very kid friendly movie. It's called Gamera versus Jiger, and where this monster called Jiger injects an egg into Gamera, and into his lung, and it's an absurd movie, and I mean, it's so, like, you never even give a thought to it, and so I was like, oh ha ha, Mr. Funny, I'm gonna like combine this innocuous thing, this horrible thing, and it'll be hilarious. It'll be like Rick and Morty.
You've given these monsters like almost more sentience than the giant monsters that are just attacking each other and then, you know, injecting eggs into one another or something. But when you have a character that there's a lot of personal stakes and you know, the reader is
this is mostly a character piece, isn't it? I know they're all monsters, but you know. Yeah.
Well, and I also think, like, it did come across the way kind of like Rick and Morty and that kind of like mashup stuff does, but I wasn't as comfortable of sitting in a book with that kind of reputation, you know, like that kind of cynicism. And so anyway.
Yeah, I'll get you, man. Again, we don't want to dwell on it. It's just
stand by. I'll stand by it and all that stuff, but I don't know.
But the book itself also
I'll just complain about it every time I hear about it.
Sorry.
But it's also a book that is, you know, it's giant monsters, it's brightly coloured. One of the interesting things about this is like you say, there is a certain downbeats and there's lots of like there's some violence that goes on in it. But I find it fascinating that almost the juxtaposition between, you know, because yours is a really like striking, colourful style. I mean, every cover of a Kaiju Max issue or book, it's just glorious Technicolor.
Yeah.
and then like I remember when I was reading, because you know, obviously a lot of people have recommended this book. So when I read the first trailer, I was like, there's a nice sort of swerve that you do to the reader, because you buy them in with what it is, but then it, because it is more of a character piece, you're sort of like, oh, this isn't what I wanted, but I am in, because it's so different. Do you know what I mean? It's like I haven't, you know, Pacific Rim. Yes, giant monsters just fighting giant mech. No one stopped to think, what is that giant monster thinking and feeling?
Yeah, does it want a tattoo or for My Little Pony? You know,
right. Yeah. Maybe you never know. Maybe. Yeah, exactly. We'll never know because it's dead at the bottom of the ocean or whatever.
Yeah,
it's strange. Like, well,
go ahead.
Those things never go out of fashion, do they? The big monsters and the big robots. They sort of fall out of the public eye. But as soon as someone comes, right, I've got a thing, giant robots or giant monsters, everyone's like, in. Yeah, I'm sold. I'm down for that.
100% in. And yeah. When I had heard a little bit about like Kong versus Godzilla, I'd be like, I've seen enough monster movies. I don't know. And then I saw the trailer and I'm like, okay, I'm ready to go. Like, when's this coming out?
We're not going to ask the controversial, what side are you on? Because, you know, we don't want to be that show. We don't want to court controversy and ask whether Team Kong or Team Godzilla.
I remember watching the original as a kid and being quite upset. I'm thinking, oh, please don't lose. You know, you really, you know.
Mm.
Yeah. Well, we can all come together and agree that the Matthew Broderick one is bloody awful.
Yeah, I think so. I saw that at the cinema. So did I. You know, 2 hours of my life I'm never getting back.
You know, I'm gonna just point out one thing here.
Here we go.
I just recently rewatched that movie and I was like, this is a perfectly decent movie that is not about Godzilla. Like,
yes,
right, like if you called it
anything else, people would be like, oh yeah, okay, fine. Like,
yeah.
I mean, like if you had made a Godzilla movie out of what was Cloverfield, people will be like, this isn't what Godzilla is, but you know, because Godzilla isn't that thing. It's like it was the beast from 20,000 fathoms or whatever. Like,
yeah,
I saw that at the cinema the same day as I saw the remake of the Avengers. I saw two movies in a day. That was a hell of a day.
What do you mean, the remake of the Avengers? Are you talking about
the Uma Thurman one?
That was a good day for you.
That's not spoken about over here, Xander, because it's actually sacrilegious. I think it's against the law. About that movie.
Well, it's the reason why they had to call Avengers Assemble, didn't they? They can't call Avengers.
Oh, is that right?
In the UK, yeah, because they
called
the title.
Oh.
Everyone calls it the Avengers, but the titles have to be Avengers Assemble.
Right, I get you. I wondered about that. Yeah, okay. The Avengers is a great series, but that movie is terrible. But there you go.
Just like Wild Wild West in that movie.
Oof. Oh, Christ, yeah, God. Yeah, or the Lost in Space movie. Do you remember that one?
Right. Yeah. Oh. With Joey.
Matt LeBlanc.
Yeah. Who can we get to be the hero? What about Matt LeBlanc? Are you serious?
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
Right. Back to time. Back to
movie. Yeah, it's not a very good movie, but I do really like the, and like Matt LeBlanc's not, he's terrible in it, but his character has a really cool concept design for the armor that's sort of like, it's like plate armor that goes over his head. It just looks really cool. Anyway, I had to put that on record.
One redeeming feature.
One redeeming feature. Armor. Yeah.
Good. Well, sorry. Back to you, Xander.
When you were saying about the colorful style of Kaiju Max and luring people in it, and I think one of the things that's interesting about that, I mean, part of it was intentional. Part of it was like I was just kind of learning to color like on that scale, like that amount of work because there's a color assistant on the book, but I basically do all the color myself, and so I was having to be pretty simple. And so then I was just going with like a bright, you know, a bright sunshiny aesthetic. But also it's like I felt like my style of telling a story is pretty downbeat. Like all my stories kind of get a little sad. And so if I started with bright colors and giant monsters, then if I brought it, you know, brought the tone down a little bit, it would kind of even out instead of starting with like grays and blues and, you know, and then being worse.
That's one of the reasons I really like it, is that counterpoint of, you know, the tone of the, you know, the actual story, but compared to like the bright colors and the, you know, it really works.
Yeah. And you can also do some nice sort of narrative experiments with that, you know, because people obviously like giant monsters, so they'll see kaiju, which is a word that has felt like over the past 10 years has really hit in the Western media an awful lot.
You're not a proper nerd if you don't know what a kaiju is now, do you?
But it does a similar thing, like, for instance, The Walking Dead. That was like, you know, zombies. I'm going to read this book. You read that, and there's a lot more to it than it just being a zombie book. And Kaiju Max sort of does the same thing, doesn't it? It's sort of like, oh, well, I'll buy you in on the monsters, but look, you've got a lot more nutrition in this than you thought.
Nutrition, yeah.
Is that the first time your book has been described to
nutritious?
Yes, by far. Only it is the first time for sure.
Writing wise, with Kaiju Max, did you have like a definite end planned out? Like, say, I'm going to take this up to X amount of issues, X amount of books, and this is where the story's going to end. Or was it a more of a kind of organic process that kind of grew and flourished as you went along?
It's not all one linear story. So obviously I've been sort of adding and subtracting things as we went, but I always sort of intended to end it in a particular way. I mean, the way it's going to end, but like, and I would sort of, and I had extrapolated out of characters sort of arcs. So like I knew where this character was probably going to end up, or this character's probably going to end up, but I really kind of knew, like, oh, well, okay, it's going to be 6 seasons long. 6 seasons long was a marketing consideration because I was like, well, I don't know, how about five sets of 6 issues? And they're like, how about 6? And I'm like, why? And they're like, because that would make, you know, 6 books or then 2, 3 hardcovers. I'm like, okay.
What made you call it seasons?
Well, pretentiousness. But it was, I felt like, and I mean, things have changed a little bit, but I felt like at the time comics were called volumes, and volumes didn't have any meaning. I didn't think in terms of like how much story, because I felt like there would be a volume would just be like, well, we hit the 150 page cutoff point, now that's volume one. But it never really kind of had made any claims about how whether the story had wrapped up. And so I felt like a season, if I said a season, it was, people understood that from TV, that like, okay, well, it's an interconnected story, it's probably going to continue, but a bunch of arcs are going to kind of wrap up. And so I wanted to give people the sense that it was going to be sort of a cohesive unit by itself.
That makes perfect sense, because people, that's a language people understand.
And I think that for all the people that are like, what does it think, it's a TV show, there's a more people who understand, like, oh, okay, issue 6 of season 5 is gonna tie up a few knots, you know.
You know, the way it's laid out,
a satisfying ending.
The way it's laid out in Comixology is perfectly understandable. That's where I read it, and it makes it an easy reading experience, I got to tell you.
The only problem is that it doesn't people don't know if it's an ongoing series or a limited series, and so it never gets nominated for either category for awards.
Of course. Right.
Hopefully, I mean, I guess that's my excuse. It's not getting nominated because for the usual reasons. But
it'd be like the Lord of the Rings films when it wraps. Like, right now, we give it all the accolades. Fingers crossed.
Right, it's finally over. Thank God, we're free. Now let's give it an award.
Director's cut. Yeah.
How are you finding sort of creating it in the current 2021 with everything that's going on?
One of the things from a practical standpoint is that I had to move, you know, I had to start working at home instead of at a studio. I usually have a studio that I share with a dozen other people. So I still have that studio. I still pay for that studio, but I work at home. but and so that was, you know, there was a lot of sort of shuffling around that had to happen. But other than that, it's all, you know, it's all the same, because it's like, you know, there's a couple other people that work on it with me, but it's, I'm essentially a one man show, so I can just kind of do it, and, you know, and then I can just kind of do it by myself. So, yeah, it, in terms of working, it's virtually the same.
Did you have to pause in regards to distribution at the start of the first lockdown? I know a lot of companies sort of paused their output for a bit, didn't they?
No, that would have been a huge relief. Right, <okay. laughs> I mean, it wouldn't really, but no, actually they were, I mean, you know, I'll be frank with you, that this is not a very expensive book for a comic book company. Like, the, it's, you know, it doesn't command huge page rates, partially right. by design, because yeah. I wanted to make sure that it would finish, you know, mm. and I don't want a book to get canceled three quarters of the way through. Mm. So Oni Press is just sort of like, yeah, just keep going. Like, and turn it in, you know, we'll send you a check. So that's
cool. Is that, does,
yeah, that work? Does that been play really into sort supportive
of, sorry man, does that play into the sort of creator, I don't know, what's the deal, is it creator owned, is it, or
it's creator owned? Yeah, I yeah. mean, Oni operates in a way that a lot of, you know, sort of middle press publishers mm-hmm. do, where it's like there's a page rate and they have, you know, certain percentage of the rights, and they operate as a certain percentage of the sort of as an agent, as a makeshift agent, because I'm yeah. I don't have an agent,
right,
it's all mine. Yeah, so
yeah, I get you. Yeah, cool.
So you nice really one. Are sort of in the trenches, like self-publishing, like this book.
Essentially, but I have self-published before, and this is a yeah. zillion times easier. Like, the yeah. money that goes to them is well worth it, you yeah. know. And I mean, you know, and I've, of course you can play in the margins there a little bit, but like, I've self-published, and it's like, you don't want to pack up boxes and send them, and you don't want to take those orders. And it's just so much stuff that, at least the way that I think, I just can't keep it all in mind. It's yeah. too hard.
Yeah. With a book, like, I mean, certainly with a book like this that has sort of taken off and got a larger following, you know, so sometimes like the success of a book, like if you are, for instance, a small press creator and you've got those boxes at home, it then becomes an extra logistical challenge, doesn't it? If your book takes off, it's a two-edged sword, because it's fantastic, because your book is now bigger than ever, but also you still have to deliver those books, you still got to go to the post office
yeah.
or wherever, which shows
you have a like million urgent
yeah yeah
you have million urgent jobs that yeah. are not but they are urgent, you yeah. know, so it's like yeah. they keep you from doing the important stuff.
So another one of the advantages of working with Oni, who are a publisher we've talked about quite a few times, because they are yeah. they are kind of like a legendary sort of indie publisher, certainly mm-hmm. stateside and stuff, but another one of the yeah. advantages, it frees you up to just create the book, doesn't it?
Yeah, and I think, you know, having and actually, you know, part of it was like, I wanted to do this book, but it was going to be a side project. Like, I was not originally going to draw it. I was just right. going to write it, because it was just a mashup kind of gag book that I really, and it really, the first idea, I was like, oh, it probably won't be very long, 6 issues, or, you know, we'll see what we can get away with. But it was really going to kind of be a cynical, dark, black humor, you know, or gallows humor type of comic, but Charlie Chu, who's now a VP at Oni, but was the editor, he was the senior editor at the time, he was the one who really championed it and said, this is more than what you're making it out to be. And then when the original artist went on to better things, he said, do you want to draw it? I think you could make it into something really, really different. And I mean, and it's like, yeah, the art, like, all for all the talk of the art being sort of soft and cartoony and how that's such a contrast with the writing, it's like, yeah, that wouldn't, I mean, it wasn't going to be like that. It was going to be a much more vivid, much more quote air quote realistic type of book at that time. So yeah, I mean, so having a big, you know, a cheerleader and somebody who sees its potential beyond what you see is really valuable as well.
Mm. Yeah.
Did that change the way you write it once you knew you were basically the one man band? You know, did you write it slightly differently from then on?
Yeah, I think that I would have really backed off a lot of the harsher stuff if the artwork were more realistic. Okay. I think that it would not have been a fun book. It would have been hard for people to tolerate. Whereas I think that cartoony style that sure makes it go down easy. You know,
it's kind of dark and stormy and rainy, and all the creatures are shown in silhouettes against like a blue sky. It'd be like, oh my god, this is unrelentingly
bleak. Yeah.
It would have been brutal. I just don't think that people would have liked it at all. I mean, there's plenty of people who tell me that it's an evil book and that it, you know, they don't like it.
No.
Anyway.
Who says that?
Is that Pokemon fans mostly, or is it all?
No, this late in the series, people have pretty much decided whether they're going to like it or not. But early on, there were a lot of people who were like, funny, you know, monsters in prison. Ha, ha, oh, shit.
Yeah,
I got some pretty sort of strongly worded letters at the beginning saying that, like, you know, this is a really unpleasant book, and we're going to guess that you're a pretty unpleasant guy.
Oh my god,
are they dead now?
Oh yeah, I took care of them. No.
In the shower. Yeah.
I quickly read through the first book again today, and there's a bit where they're in the gym yard and they're all like pressing buildings.
Oh, I love that moment.
Such a fantastic little touch.
I was going to ask about that, Dave.
Like that gag, because it has nothing to do with like the internal logic of the world or the story or anything. Like it's just a gag.
It's a gag. It's great.
See, that's one of the things I like about it is you get sucked into this world of, you know, huge monsters chatting to each other, but your mind makes you think that they're just in a prison and they're chatting to each other in the same way that humans would be just in a prison. And then I love it the way occasionally you just throw in a tiny person, or on the shelf there'll be a big ship sitting there and you realize it's a real ship or something like that. And you think, oh right, and I'm back in the game, you know, I'm back in, these are fucking immense creatures and you know, like that. Yeah,
it's fun, and it's also like, you know, it's one of those things where you have written and drawn yourself into a corner where you're like, oh, now they got to have a thing in their hand, but what is it? Yeah. Like, actually, one of the big things that I struggled with is what was money going to be like, you know? And so I don't know if you caught it, but they talk about rye stone. They're like these stones, and they call them rye, R-A-I.
Right.
And that's a real thing. Like there's this tribe of people in Micronesia that they don't have proper money. They don't have money in the way that we have it. They have these stone discs that are immense, and they say this belongs to so and so. Oh, now that person wants 5 cows, and so he's assigning the ownership of this giant stone disc to this other guy. And so now they've made a trade. So I love that. Then this obscure, like bizarre, like giant stone disc based thing becomes just a stack of quarters to these monsters, you know. Like, and it's far more numerous to them than it, you know, than it ever could be in real life. But
yeah,
anyway,
I like that.
A friend of mine suggested that to me, and I was like, my god, that's the greatest thing I've ever heard.
So your first entryway into comics, then? How did you kind of think, right, now comics, that's for me?
I used to read comics because my next door neighbor was really into, like, you know, comics in sort of the mid 80s. And so, like, you know, he's like, you got to try Daredevil by Frank Miller and then Gru the Wanderer and Usagi Yojimbo. And like, there was a lot of, that was the big black and white indie boom. And so like, there were a lot of, you know, and there were a lot of sort of false starts of like weird things that, you know, that were pretty good. And it also, you know, when you would read Ninja Turtles or whatever, you'd be like, this is a really good comic, but I see how it's made. Like, I can see how those lines were drawn. And I suddenly feel like this is a thing that you could accomplish. Mm-hmm. And there were mini comics. Matt Fizel did a whole bunch of mini comics. Cynical Man was one of them. I started making mini comics when I was in, you know, middle school. Sixth or seventh grade. And then when I was in high school, I started doing illustrations and little comics. And I did the school newspaper, and when there was still such a thing. in college, I did comic strips for the school paper, and
but weren't you eventually part of that black and white thing? Because didn't you work for New England Comics on, was it Chainsaw Vigilante? Was it?
Yeah, Chainsaw Vigilante. Yeah, that was my first comics. Now, so I was still in college.
Oh, wow. Okay.
Yeah, and I don't know why I was so hot to get off the starting block, but like, I was just setting out all these, you know, samples, you know, and in 1993, I think, when they sort of got back to me, like that, you know, Image had just started, like Jim Lee had become like the biggest star in the world after just kind of being this young guy who started drawing comics. So like it was this sort of acceptable bet on like these newcomers. And so like, you know, this 20-year-old guy who's like has, you know, what seemed like a more realistic bet to New England Comics than the same situation might be years later, you know. And I mean, you know, that comic didn't do anything. Like it sold terrible and they canceled it.
But it was a Tick spinoff. I'm right.
Yeah, it was a Tick spinoff. So I mean, it had a start, like it was going to start at a high level, right? Just because the Tick was, you know, was the coolest thing going. Yeah. And actually one of the things from Chainsaw Vigilante ended up in the Tick TV show from Amazon, the one that just came out last couple of years.
Oh, newest one. Oh, really? Oh, cool.
Yeah. Yeah, it was Giant Naked Man. I was like, now I've experienced that thing where, you know, like where you made something for a comic and now it's in a movie and you're like, huh.
Yeah, I have etched my mark on the world and it is that Giant Naked Man.
Yeah. What did you do? Did you buy a couple of sports cars, Xander, or is it?
Oh, sure. Yeah. Hot Wheels sports cars. Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's the thing of it. Like, there's so much stuff in comics that's work for hire that you just do it, and then somebody owns it, and it's part of their, library of things that they can sell off to whoever.
But you then went on to work with Alan Moore, didn't you, as well? On was it Smacks and a couple other things?
Yeah, Top Ten was the first, and then Smacks was a spinoff. And that
loved Smacks. Yeah, that was all great series, really fun. Yeah.
Oh yeah, it was really fun. I wish I'd done better on it. I did an okay job, but I was terrible at deadlines, and so there was always stuff that was kind of falling through the cracks. Anyway, but yeah, all that was due to Gene Ha. Gene Ha is, you know, I don't know if you've ever interviewed him or talked to him, but he's the nicest person, and he's been one of my best friends for 25 years. And he knew, you know, and he had moved to the Twin Cities to Minneapolis and ended up just needing somebody to help him with Top Ten. And so then we just kind of sorted out who was working on what. And I mean, you know, I was like, I'll never say no to working with Alan Moore for sure. Mm-hmm. And working with Gene was always great. And you know, we still did stuff together.
Layout. Was it layouts you did for that? Was it?
I did layout. Yeah. Initially was going to be kind of inks. And then I ended up doing layouts just because it was like, our workflow was so different.
You got those famous or infamous Alan Moore scripts through, did you? And had to
Yeah, and they were absurd because I mean Top Ten of course was like this leading thing of like, hey, we're gonna put a whole bunch of like weird, you know, sort of almost legally actionable stuff in the background. And so he's listing off all this. I mean, you know, it was almost like this catalog of all these things. And it's like, and of course, you know, he has this encyclopedic knowledge of like Silver Age comic books. So he's putting in all this stuff. And then I would put in a couple things and Gene would put in a couple things. And, you know, that's why it was just choked with detail. And I mean, it was great fun. I mean, those were days in my old studio back, you know, we were in downtown Minneapolis. So it was a lot of fun.
Gene Hall was
in the studio next door.
I think it shows the sense of humor that Moore's got. People think of him, I said this recently, but people think of him as being this sort of, you know, he's a bit bitter now and all this sort of thing, but he's got a tremendous sense of humor about him. And that book does exemplify a lot of that, doesn't it? Especially the Easter egg stuff.
Oh yeah, I mean, not just funny, but like a totally absurd and over the top too. Like I love all of this funniest stuff. Yeah,
yeah, definitely.
So, when did you start sort of writing? Then when did you because obviously you started on the art side. I mean, I know you know when you moved it professionally. You know what inspired you to actually start writing comics?
Well, I mean, I wrote from the get-go. Like, I wrote Chainsaw Vigilante, and I wrote, and then the next book I did was my creator-owned series called The Replacement God, which is the medieval fantasy Lord of the Ringsy type of adventure. And then I had switched to, then when I went to Top 10 and Smacks, that's when I was just doing art.
How did you find that difference?
Well, I mean, drawing from an Alan Moore script, I think, is kind of funny. I used to call it it was like comics Tetris, where he would list all these things and you had to kind of somehow fit them all into the panel. You know, there really was just barely enough room for all those things. And I always felt like that was a great challenge and it was really interesting. And I felt like my storytelling skills came into play, but it was way more satisfying to write it all, to create it and write it all myself rather than just executing a very detailed, you know, blueprint.
Yeah.
So then while I was drawing that, I would ended up doing a lot of pitching at DC Comics because I had sort of an in, you know, Top 10 meant that people would sort of return my phone calls. And so I was pitching a lot of stuff at DC and I was finding it very frustrating actually, because nobody wanted to see my artwork. Was not what anybody wanted to see, you know, because it was too cartoony and it didn't, it, you know, it wasn't the house style for anything, at the time, you know. Yeah. Like,
and DC is a very house style kind of place as well.
Of everyone, it really is at the moment, I think, isn't it? Yeah.
Yeah. And even then they didn't have any younger reader stuff. They didn't have any kids Justice League or whatever, you know, the sort of stuff that they have in the margins now. They didn't even have that really.
Yeah.
Or if they did, it had been colonized by a couple artists and they weren't letting anybody else in. And so I was pitching stuff as a writer, and I mean, and frankly, it's like I wasn't the type of writer that they really wanted either, because my stuff was too idiosyncratic and it was too, I don't know, it was more of a throwback to sort of pulpier stuff. And I mean, obviously, you know, if you read any Kaiju Max or Heck, it's like it's all sort of like a little bit absurd, a little bit over the top, you know, and then much sadder than you expect it to be. And they weren't having it for Green Lantern or whatever.
And so I'd read a Wonder Woman like that. I got to tell you, it'd work. Yeah. I mean, yeah.
Yeah. You would, but then they'd be like, this is hurting our brand. Get the hell out of here. I'm trying to put out another Wonder Woman movie, you know. So,
well, that might stop. Never know.
Doing every 2 years. They can be silly, they can be dumb, I don't care. Let's keep making more. I mean, for a while I was really unhappy with the way that I was doing. I was sort of like kind of doing illustration, but I wouldn't really, or art on comics, but I wouldn't really get long assignments. And so it was really kind of like, it's kind of beating my head against a wall. I wasn't getting anywhere with writing to speak of. And I was really unhappy. And then actually for a while, what I did is, through Gene, but also through a bunch of editors, I ended up doing a lot of layouts for other artists. So like, if you look at in like the 2007 to 2000, you know, six to 10, maybe you might see my name in like a bunch of random credits where it's like, oh, hey, Superboy is really late. Can you do layouts for the artists so that they can kind of get a running start? Or, you know, we're changing artists frequently on this series. Can you do layouts for this so that they can kind of, you know, settle into a style? I mean, obviously it didn't do anything for my career, but it was actually really quite fun and it was excellent practice.
Yeah. And it keeps you making comics as well, doesn't it? Really?
Yeah. It keeps you. And also they trust you, man. They know that you know the nuts and bolts of a comic. So they get you in almost to fix it, I think, you know?
And I had kind of come off of, you know, Smacks, where I was blowing deadlines and I was really having a tough time kind of keeping on track, to this where I was just like cranking it out. It's, you know, it's due at 5 o'clock on Friday. I'll turn it in at 4. And the editor thought that I was the greatest person who'd ever lived.
Yeah.
And then I could sleep like a rock all weekend, you know, like it was just no, like it there was a lot of sort of existential stress that kind of went out the window once I settled into that thing. And then, and then after that, I started working on Heck and I started working on Kaiju Max, and, you know, and I got these things that were a little bit more fulfilling, but, but at the time as a day job, it was like, man, that was great. You know, doing two or three books a month that were, you know,
It's almost a learning process, isn't it?
Yeah. But did you find that some of the work processes you learned during that period, you then took on for your...
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I really started to realize that, like, oh, there's like 50,000 ways to lay out, like to compose panels for this type of scene, but there's only about three that really work, you know? And unless you have a really specific way of doing it, you might as well stick with those three, you know? And so I ended up sort of like being able to sort of like trim the fat in terms of like how much thinking I'm doing about you know, just your sort of standard, you know, thriller scene or whatever that you have. You can kind of just do it in the best way, you know, in sort of like the conventional way, and it's fine,
and,
you know?
And also it's what serves the story, isn't it? I think, when you're a writer, artist as well, there's probably some people, and everyone has this learning, where there's almost the showing off of what they can do. So every page is going to be different. And like, but at the same time, there's a reason why these classic storytelling page layouts and things work. Sometimes you don't need to use 2,000 panels when three panels will do for a conversation.
It's the reason it's the reason that Sal Buscema's had a job in Comic Sony, where he just told a story. And I think that a lot of people miss that sometimes.
Well, and I think it, you know, it's as a, when you're drawing about, you know, monsters and aliens and like spaceships and armadas and stuff like that, it's like you want to present it pretty clearly, like, so that there's no question of what you're looking at. You're like, you know, did that giant monkey really punch that giant lizard in the face? Yeah, it did. See, it's a wide shot. It's like a nice wide clear shot. Whereas if you're doing something that's about people's regular lives, like you know, Acme Novelty Library or something like that, like something that is so achingly mundane that it makes sense to sort of break it up in sort of a crazy avant-garde way so that you make something mundane into something kind of cool and interesting.
it's a medium, isn't it? It has all different ways of telling it, but I think you're right for something that you're doing, or maybe Marvel and DC, they, you know, I think they need to pull back a bit from the noodling sometimes for me. The only thing I want to ask you about, Xander, is obviously Kaiju Max is kind of your baby. Have you found that any experience in promoting it that would be helpful for other people at all? Because I think I first heard about you on 11 O'Clock Comics. I heard them mentioning you there.
In terms of like, if you have an indie book, how do you?
Kaiju Max is a book that a lot of, you know, comics fans know about. You know, is there a particular way that you've gone about getting it out there, or do Boom handle that? Not Boom, do Oni handle that for you, or?
They handle it a bit. You know, and there's a, I mean, the funny thing is that, like, at this stage in the, you know, in the process, 5/6 of the way through, you know, we've kind of settled into the expectation that there's really not going to, you're not going to move the needle too much, you know.
Yeah,
but it is nice, because even now it's like you'll just see bump up. Oh, this person recommended it. Oh, this person recommended it. Or this person decided to buy it. And I mean, unfortunately for me, it's that long game where you just keep making what you hope is a good product. I wish I had some cool tricks. I'd love to tell you one, but I'd also like it for my own sake.
Yeah, I mean, I know. It's a cracking series, man, and I certainly didn't discover it till late in the run. And I think there's so much product out there. Sometimes you've got to get your head above the noise, haven't you, just to get people to notice it again.
Mm. Oh, sure. Well, I think about all the books that I just think are fantastic, like Giant Days or Chew, which I didn't discover until they were almost finished, you know, and it's, oh God, what, you know, and John Layman, the writer of Chew, is a friend of mine. I've known him for 20 years. Like, but I'm just you know, I'm a comic book artist. I can't afford comics. I don't really get a bunch of them at a time.
Vince is a big fan of his, aren't you, Vince?
The name has come up many times on this show because he wrote Outer Darkness, which is a series that I could not stop talking about, and it broke my heart. It still hurts.
Doesn't it? Yeah.
Is it done? Is it done?
Yeah, it's done now. Yeah.
Oh, they stopped it. I love that series. And the art in it was amazing.
Oh, Afu-chan. Oh,
such a great series.
Oh, yeah, so good. Yeah, actually, it was funny. When I read it, I was like, God damn it. That was exactly the premise it was a version of the premise that I had for a Star Trek, basically the exact same idea, you know.
Did you say it too loudly while John was listening? Is that what you're saying?
Called him up and I muttered, God damn it, right into my phone. Yeah. it was great. And then it's like I read the first two trades and I had to text him immediately. And he was, probably like, oh, great, I'm so glad you like this series that's over.
I mean, that's the thing is, there's always there's two sides to the story, isn't there? Sometimes you discover a series like A Giant Days or Chew, much like me, and you can look back and go, oh, thank God that this series was popular because now I have five omnibuses to chew through.
Yeah.
But sometimes you miss it, you know, you catch up on it a bit too late.
And it's over and you're like, God damn it. there is a book that came out right as I was getting into comics called Eye of Mongambo, which is this black and white book. I don't remember who published it, but actually Fantagraphics published it before they kind of got into, you know, only serious indie books. So they were also doing doing Usagi Yojimbo and stuff.
Yeah.
But it was like an Indiana Jones type character gets turned into a duck and has to go on the rest of his career as a duck. And it was fantastic. And it's like, you know, it's like, I think he got nominated for Best New Artist and lost to Jim Lee. And then he just kind of decided, I'm done with this.
But saying that,
like, all right, but fair enough. Like, yeah. Jim Lee was probably the best new artist that year.
Yeah. But we're talking about like the satisfying sort of series that are, you know, that are wrapping up and stuff. And certainly, Kaiju Max, you must be immensely proud of what you've been able to accomplish with the series.
It makes me very pleased that you would say that. Yeah, I am proud. I did this book called The Replacement God, and the specter of not finishing that has kind of haunted me for like the second half of my career. And so, yeah, I mean, you know, fingers crossed, I am going to finish Kaiju Max in the next year. It'd feel very satisfying.
We're not talking to you on season two. We're talking to you.
Right.
The end of the tunnel's there.
I know, and it's a little nerve-wracking because, like, I just think, like, oh man, my go-to move for the past five seasons is like, I can't fit that into this season. I better push it to the next one. And oops, I've run out of seasons.
Kaiju Max the Wilderness years. Just come back to it in a few years.
Don't tell me you're going to Game of Thrones it. You know, where they just keep pushing the story on, and then all of a sudden, oh no, we've only got six episodes to finish it. Let's just finish it.
I'm going to really try hard not to do that.
We have confidence in you.
Yeah.
Oh boy.
But, it's a cracker, man. Absolutely love it. I read two volumes today. Just love it.
Oh wow! Thank you.
Yeah. And it's only a, I mean, if you're listening and you haven't checked out Kaiju Max, people, you really do need to, because it's great and it's perfect timing, because, like, you know, let's name them
the right time.
Yeah, Kong versus Godzilla. Do you know what I mean? Never mind that nonsense. This is the giant monsters you want.
Yeah, this is what you want. Comics are better than movies. We all know that.
Yep.
Can I ask a bit of advice about movies, though, if you don't mind, before we go? Xander is. Kid, I used to watch all the stuff like, you know, King Kong versus Godzilla and King Kong versus Mecha Godzilla and all this sort of thing. Is there anything you'd recommend as a bit of a crazy, crazy movie I could track down, or a crazy series?
Yeah. First of all, Ultraman has been pretty solidly great for its whole run.
Right.
But there are there are some really good stuff here and there, like Ultraman Mabius. Like Ultraman Orb was a couple of years ago. Anyway, but I just recently watched, and I mean, this is in my wheelhouse, like the 60s, like the super stupid 60s ones are kind of my favorite. So like the one called Invasion of Astro Monster.
Oh, yes. I've heard of this one. Yeah.
Yeah.
I might get this one. Yeah.
It has another name, but I don't remember what it is. But like, basically it's like, aliens tell the Earth, they're like, we're having problems with a Monster X on our planet. Could you lend us Godzilla and Rodan to fight it?
Oh, right. Yeah, I need this.
So they like take them to this planet in a, like an orb of energy, and they fight it, and it's King Ghidorah. Sorry, spoilers. And they, and then the aliens double cross them. I mean, it's so dumb, but it really moves. Like, it's actually kind of a, like, it kind of feel invested in this really dumb movie.
I need to get on the Blu-ray for that. I think I need a Blu-ray of that one. Yeah. Yeah, definitely. I always feel like when you guys,
Blu-ray.
Yeah. I always feel like when you guys got all this gold, and I'm not dissing it, cause I quite enjoyed it at the time, but we got like stuff like Thunderbirds and the Jerry Anderson, you know, Captain Scarlet.
That,
and
man, that's classic.
It is. I'm not dissing it, man. Yeah, I like it. But I
watched Thunderbird. They had somehow Thunderbirds made it to our shores as well. Okay. I got a lot of enjoyment out of that.
Yeah. Joe 90, Captain Scarlet's a cracker.
I mean, obviously, the Ultraman influence is rife through Kaiju Max and stuff. But did you go when you were like, this is going to be my next, this is the project I'm working on? Did you go through a period of just watching an awful lot of old monster movies one after the other?
Oh yeah. I mean, because I really, it's like I look back at the first couple issues and I'm like, oh wow, my sort of I don't know what you would call it, like the scope of my understanding of kaiju movies is kind of, I can kind of tell how small it was at the time. Like the references were sort of like to just a couple kinds of monster movies. So I really tried to expand it outward quite a bit. And you start seeing it with like the character of Jong, the guard who grows up all the armor on his back, you know, like that, that like, oh, you start seeing that that's going into Gundam territory, and that like, I don't know, there's some stuff later on where there's characters who are you know, from Super, that are sort of homages to Super Sentai, or I mean, I really tried to expand it outward as much as I could, instead of kind of saying like, oh well, this is my premise at the beginning, I can't expand beyond, you know, basically Godzilla.
Having been a parent whose son made me watch Pokemon till I fell asleep every night, you know, I have to say I did laugh out loud at the when it can't fit through the wall because it's got so fat incident. Not drawing any comparisons there, Xander, but it did make me laugh out loud that moment. Yeah.
Well, I had to watch a lot of Pokemon. I had to learn to play the card game.
Right, okay.
And which is really pain.
I feel your pain. But,
but I watched a lot of that, and it's like, and there's something... I felt like when I did the whole, like in the fifth season, there's the lawyers for the Pikachu like character are basically Team Rocket. Yeah. And having done all of that, I felt like this weight was lifted off my chest. Like this is, it was worth it to have watched all that Pokemon. They're like, I've fulfilled my destiny. Now I can die, or I can at least stop drawing any more.
I remember sitting on a couch with my son telling me for the 400th time, after he'd watched an episode for the 800th time, look, Dad, they're all helping each other. And I'm like, I hate this cartoon.
I saw a tweet a while ago where it's like, it says, my son can successfully summarize a 22 minute episode of Pokemon in 54 minutes.
Yeah, I'll be right. Yeah.
Do you have time to do like commissions and things? Do you get asked to draw kaiju monsters for people?
I do. I mean, I do get asked, and I do sometimes have time, but unfortunately, I don't usually get to it very fast. I always want people to tell me, ask me at a show, and then come back in an hour, and then yell at me if I'm not done because I'll never do it at home. You know?
Yeah.
But when you're sort of brand or whatever is that like you draw monsters, it's like, oh my god, that makes things so much easier. Like I can't imagine if I were like somebody like Terry Dodson or like Adam Hughes, where they like draw like pinup girls, and I'd be like, oh, that's so hard. Like,
plus they must get the weirdest requests.
Yeah, just have them bending over a little bit more, just a little bit more. Oh, yeah.
I forgot about that. Yeah, I didn't even think about that. That would be the worst part. But yeah, monsters. I mean, like, you can hardly draw a monster wrong, you know.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah,
it's, sure. It's really nice. There's a lot of room for error.
Yeah.
Our minds are going places, and I'm not going to ask the question.
Yeah, 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 yeah,
yeah.
Good.
Yeah, good. Oh, thank you. thank you for your discretion.
So, if people want to get their hands on like Kaiju Max or like follow you and see how the, you know, follow your work and stuff, where can they find you?
They can follow me on Twitter, which is where I normally am on social media. It's Xander_Cannon, and then I'm on Instagram, just Xander Cannon, all one word. And to get Kaiju Max, you know, it's in any good comic book store. You can order it online. I just recently was getting some. I don't know how things are in the UK with this, but the bookshop.org has a. If you don't want to feed the beast that is Amazon, and I understand if you don't mind, but there's a bookshop.org. Is a really good resource.
Nice.
Because they'll try to source it from local stores. Yeah, is my understanding.
That's cool. And especially if you want those, the nice big deluxe edition hardcover.
Oh yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. The deluxe edition is was fun to do because it's like, oh, it's big. But then I also, at the bottom of every page, I do the annotations. Oh, wow. Like, so it's like, oh, this character is based on such and such a character. And oh that, you know, So I tried to give it a little value added thing so it's like basically all the little jokes or all the little references and gags are explained.
Oh, wow. Because normally it's like with things like this, it's a bigger version of the comic you've got, and there's like back matter and stuff. But that's amazing if you've got all this.
Yeah, I'm ordered in a minute. Yeah, that's getting ordered.
Yeah, there's some back matter as well. Like I wrote the script for the first issue. That was the only issue I wrote a script for. So it has that whole thing.
Hang on. I can't let that slide. I beg your pardon? You only wrote the script for one issue?
Yeah, well, because after that, I write it and lay it out at the same time. So, like, I just...
Okay.
Instead of typing out, wide shot of such and such an island, I just start with, like, sketching out a page and go, boo, you know, here it is, and then I kind of... And then I can kind of write the dialogue as I pencil it. You know, I'm kind of like, oh, that guy looks like he should be saying this, you know.
Wow, that's
so it's a little bit more organic.
Mind.
What's
wow.
that?
That's blown my mind. Wow.
Oh, really? Well, sometimes it's nice to have dialogue. Like, sometimes I'll have a section of dialogue written out for a conversation. But a lot of times when it's like, the storytelling's mainly visual, where it's like, oh, you know, zooming in on this, and then this person is observing this, that, you know, there's no point in writing all that stuff out. You might as well just kind of figure it out on a visual way and see what fits and see how what looks good. And
wow.
I don't know. It's kind of fun to live in those boxes before, you know, to sort of see what's going to look good in those boxes instead of sort of like dreaming a whole bunch of stuff. Then you have to kind of cram into boxes.
That's a lovely way to look at it.
Can I just say that Kaiju Max Volume 2, the deluxe edition, there's two left on Amazon because I just ordered one.
There's two now,
and it's currently at half price. So get on it.
Oh, yeah, nice! They do deeply discount it, which that's fine. They pay us the same amount,
Nice.
But it'll be one of those books that no doubt you could probably kill a person with if you dropped it on the head.
And you could kill yourself with it if you don't like plant your feet properly when you pick it up.
Yes,
that's a giant book for a giant series. There you go. It's good.
Yeah,
monster book.
It's kaiju size. That's what we're trying.
Before we go, has it been translated into Japanese?
No, I think that the Japanese, like you were saying earlier, I think the Japanese have decided they've got enough comics.
Sure.
I lived in Japan for a couple of years, and it's like the only Western comics that I saw over there were stuff that was very like a very specific art style that, you know, like Jeff Darrow's stuff would make it over, or Mike Mignola, or Hellboy. I saw a lot of Hellboy stuff actually, but really only in like bookstores. It didn't sort of pierce the mainstream like toys or anything.
Interesting.
But yeah, no, not Japanese. It's been translated into French and published by Bliss Editions over there, and that's been really kind of cool, although I don't speak French very well, so I don't know if the puns are making it through, but yeah, I mean, that's been really kind of neat to and I was over in Paris last 2 years ago for the first hardcover. So
it's a great scene over there, man. The comic scene's excellent. Were you in, yeah, did you go to, is it Rue Dante, which is the street with all the comic shops in? It's great. Yeah.
No, I went to a couple scattered comic shops around Paris, and then I was in a couple other cities.
Nice.
Lille and Lyon and and I didn't go to like Angoulême. I didn't see as much of the sort of Franco-Belgian comic stuff, except in just stores that I happened through, but I was seeing a lot of like North American comics have special stores over there, which I always thought was interesting.
Yeah.
You walk into a store and you're like, I may as well be in like, what, a Toledo, you know, like just at a regular American comic book store.
Yeah. I did my first Angoulême last year, and I'm desperate to go back. It was amazing. It was just so good. Yeah.
I would love to go to Angoulême. Paris Comic Con was pretty cool. Like,
okay. You know,
but it was, nice. But again, it was just like, going to Chicago Comic Con, you know?
Okay.
Well, hopefully we'll be able to see you when the world becomes in some kind of normal. We will see you over here in the UK for a show. I would love to.
I'd love to come. I've got some cousins in Shrewsbury that I'd love to come and stay with them for a while. But
if you read anything by Chris Claremont, it's only about an hour to go anywhere in the UK.
That's what I gather. I'm sorry. I'm just like saying stupid stuff. You don't even.
Oh, you're fine.
No. So we hope to see you in the flesh soon, but thank you very much for joining us this week, Dan. It's been amazing.
It's been great.
Yeah, well, anytime.
How's that? That's a good way to start your week, isn't it? With giant monsters and prison drama. And
it's good when the guests turn out to be top geezers. We always like that. That's good stuff.
And definitely seek out the, like we've been telling you, just seek out the books because they're really great stuff. Really, really good stuff. And Xander's a legend for joining us this week.
Yeah.
But we've got some shout outs, don't we, this week, gents?
Yeah, I've got a few.
Sure do.
Mine.
Yeah, go for it.
El Marvo 2 arrived, you saucy little minx.
Oh,
you.
Yes.
Ah, brilliant.
Yes,
excellent.
I got mine as well.
Yeah, got that.
Cool.
Looks good, man. Looks nice. Yeah, it's good stuff.
That's kind of a weird one because I completed that like near the beginning part of last year. Obviously, it didn't go to press till. It gets fresh till later. It's November, December.
Still fresh, babes. Still fresh.
Mm. Oh, yeah. Love it. I can't wait to see it in the print. Hopefully, my copies will be turning up any day.
Cool. Little shout out to the PXD, Pete Davis. He's got a new branding podcast where he talks to people about creating in different areas, and it's called The Brand Podcast. Have a listen to that. Gave me a little shout out in the first episode. Thanks, Pete. Speaking of podcasts, as I like to refer to him now, My Vince is appearing on the Mega City Book Club soon.
I believe it might be around Valentine's Day.
Obviously, yay. That's when everyone puts you on the radio, my friend, just in case, you know, they need that extra little impetus.
Yeah.
You know,
keep the wolf in the door.
Yeah. That Comic Smell is now available. That's Comic Smell Comic is now available to buy the hard copy. If you go to Fred Egg Comics, .bigcartel.com, fredeggcomics.bigcartel.com, and they send them out. I think mine's getting sent tomorrow, so I'm looking forward to that. I got my copy of Scrawl through. I can't remember. Same. Did you guys say you got it? Fuck me, it's a class act.
I haven't received mine yet.
I've yet to read it.
Yeah, I've got the digital, and I know it's flipping gorgeous. So I'm
Dan, have you got it there, Dan?
No, it's in the front room.
Oh, mate, I think when I pulled mine out and I just flicked through it, the first page I came to was Gustavo's pages. Fucking hell. Yeah, it's nice. That's a gold standard for anthologies, I'm going to say now. Good stuff. Yeah.
I found the digital file intimidating. It's fucking enormous. Even the book itself, there's loads of it.
I'll be honest with you, I initially balked a bit at the fact it was 12 quid. I thought, oh, that's a bit much. But then I got sent through as a present something else that was 12 quid, and it's half the size of this book.
Yeah.
It's a thick old anthology.
I could not quibble about
book. Yeah, no, I completely withdraw that allegation. Yeah, yeah, not that I made it. But the other one is Colossive Cartographies by Colossive Press, a really interesting UK indie. They do like fold out comics that are maps, and Mapamoon by Simon Russell has just come out. And if you look, there's another one called One Acre by Tim Bird. You can buy, I think, five or six of them in a £10 bundle, which I just invested in. So that will be coming to you soon, as I'm sure I'll recommend soon. But they're a lovely little sort of fold out pamphlet thing that has got some comics in it, got some maps in it, got some drawings, got some art in it. They're really nice little things. They're my ones. There you go.
Nice. Damn. Awesome.
I'm going to give a shout out to a Kickstarter, Band of Warriors 1. Merging historical events with Celtic and Greek mythology. Band of Warriors is an epic tale of adventure, betrayal, and vengeance.
I love the fact that you properly lean into the dramatic readings of the synopsis now. I love it.
Yeah.
That's by Samuel George London and Federico Aguila Corsini. And that looks like a lot of fun. What's cool. Not to like about all those elements? Nice. And we're going to start the Awesome Comics group. We finished last week doing the self-portraits thread.
There's some cracking ones in there, man. Absolute
triumph.
Yeah.
It's brilliant seeing people's work and efforts. It's Sarah Harris said like it's a great way to sort of start off a week, and I've got to second that, because just seeing people like honest.
I'd love to see some of that in print, man. I mean, one day maybe, if we see how we get on with the Facebook account, but to do a short run little printed book of all the art that we get on the threads, there's some amazing stuff on there. There really is.
Yeah, that's lovely.
Yeah.
And we got another one kicking off tomorrow. Should I announce the theme on the thread?
Yep.
Yeah, okay. Well, I'll wait till tomorrow. But
not now. Sorry.
Yeah. I can do it now. Yeah. Well, in the style of Wonder and Vision, where we've got like the characters been inserted into kind of older TV shows, we're going to lay down the gauntlet of having a character or characters of your choosing and insert them into an older fashioned sitcom. Hopefully, if you're kind of working in the UK, go for like a British sitcom. So you could have, who could we have? Maybe someone from Vanguard in Only Fools and Horses, or your characters, anything you want.
Yeah.
And I think what we're going to be looking at, not so much the artistic ability, but the idea and the humour behind it. That's what we're kind of gunning for, aren't we?
I think Eskimo Nell's a nice little movie to put people into.
Oh, God.
can I give a shout out to Cliff Cumber, who started a cult?
Well, that
is brilliant.
That's,
love cults.
That's the whole thing. That's all I need to say. Started a cult.
But yeah. I'll tell you something that should become a cult success. And that is the Awesome Comics Talk Drink and Draws.
Yes.
The next one of which is going to be this Friday, the 5th of February, 2021. Kickoff is at 1900 hours. Makes me feel like a soldier when I say that. But 7 p.m. There is an announcement on the Awesome Comics Talk Facebook group. But as always, if you can get in touch with the fourth Beatle, Tom Curry, at This Chucklehead on social media. If you want to get involved... It's all very simple. You can just turn up and you're literally just drawing and having fun with some like-minded sort of comics folk. There's always great comics discussion going on there.
It all flies by the time on that. It really does, doesn't it?
Yeah.
I'll really enjoy that. Yeah. And I don't often draw. I just sit there and watch other people draw. Yeah. It's great.
Yeah. And we're usually going from like 7 o'clock till 10 o'clock. So I know sometimes when 10 o'clock rolls around, we're thinking... How are we going to call it? Because people are really in depth.
We need to remind Brandon, because Brandon came in last time, didn't he? Like with 10 minutes to go. Yes. I thought we were bad, so we kept it running a bit longer. But I need to speak to Brandon this week to remind him the time difference.
Anyone from the States is welcome. Anyone from all over the world is welcome, actually. So it's 7 o'clock UK time. What's that?
GMT.
GMT, isn't it? Yeah. I thought you said GNT. I thought it's not gin and tonic time. Well, I guess it.
That's like on Friday at the drink and draw.
Yeah. Hey, yes.
I might just get trashed.
Are you a G&T man, Dan? Do you like your gin?
No, not really. I like G&T.
I'm a bit of a G&T fan. Mm. I'll have one. Yeah.
Vodka. That'll do me.
Just in your eyeball.
Just straight vodka.
Eyeball Dan.
It's just pouring it into whatever orifice means it'll get him drunk quicker.
What are you going to do with this? What am I meant to do with this? Stick it on my arse?
Yeah.
but seriously, don't do that on a drink and draw, because it is a video based thing. We hope to see you there though, because it's going to be a good laugh. And speaking of extra content, extra bang for your buck, we've got another little bit of audio for you here, haven't we, Tony?
Yeah.
Take it away.
So this one was slightly dated, but it was part of our fundraising thing. But it's Mark Abnett. Mark Abnett has got a Kickstarter that started, as you listen to this, yesterday. So we delayed it a bit. I had a chat with Mark and said, well, you know, we can do it now. We can do it when you kickstart. And he says, oh, that's a good idea. So I had a good little chat with him about his upcoming project. It's about 10 minutes long, and have a listen to it now. Okay, welcome to another ACP charity donation interview. For those that missed it, because this is slightly later than the other ones, throughout December we ran a bit of a charity drive. It was offered where people could donate money to a charity of their choice, and you get an interview on the podcast. So very kindly, the man I'm sitting here with, in a cyber way, is kindly donated, but we delayed it because he has a project coming up, which we're about to talk about. And I'm sitting here with my old buddy, Mark Abnett. How you doing, Mark?
I'm good, mate. How are you, Tony?
Good, good. We haven't been talking for 20 minutes. That's fine. Pretend we haven't. Good. So, Aroha Comics. Now, it's
right,
a...
I'll stop you there.
All right. I've said it wrong, have I?
Araha. Araha.
Araha?
Araha. Yeah, that'll
okay.
do.
Okay. So that's that's the Australian... I'm joking. That's the Kiwi company. So you're a... I'm right in saying, Mark, you're a Kiwi who lives in... now lives in Scotland.
Yes, with a South African wife.
Good, yeah. But you are I know because you showed me the picture. You're a British citizen now, and you earned your citizenship.
Yeah, I'm not sure if I've done the right thing there, mate. But that's a whole other... that's another podcast in itself,
isn't it? Yeah, exactly. Yeah, but good. Now, we've been talking about comics for a couple of years now, but I know that this is a project of yours. So tell us a bit. Tell us a bit about the company, man, and how it started, and you know.
Well, okay, so back in 2016, Mark Miller, who likes to promote himself a wee bit, decided to do a talent contest, and I entered that talent contest, and I won it, and I was like, oh, shit, I might be good at this. But it was just a hit girl story, and that got published by Image, which was nice, and then the reality hit that I didn't know a thing. So I basically spent the next couple of years going around conventions up and down the UK and going to a lot of trade days and stuff, and just sitting and listening and talking to people and meeting people and discovering how they got into the business proper and whatnot. And most people suggested the best thing to do is do lots of short stories and do anthologies and stuff like that.
Okay.
I thought, that's brilliant. That's a great idea. Right. And what did I do? I ignored that advice completely and saved up my money and created a 5-part series.
I have to say, I think probably anthologies have dried up a little bit anyway. There's not as many about as there used to be. I think they used to be the advice everyone gave. But there's not that many about now. Yeah.
Well, it's interesting because the way technology is evolving and how small the world is, you can work with people within your budget and within your resources from all over the globe.
Yeah.
So it was something, and I came up with this idea for this story. One day, overheard in the news another bloody earthquake in New Zealand and in Kaikoura in the South Island. And for some reason, all the seabed around the harbour had shot up about 5 metres. So, you have earthquakes and stuff falls down. Never heard of stuff shooting up before. And then around the same time, it was announced that there's actually the eighth undiscovered continent in the world is this area around New Zealand. And apparently it's got the lowest seashelf that was once one of the big guns, the big continents.
All right.
And that just got some ideas bubbling in my head and write what you know. And I started doing a story about a future New Zealand, which had arose from the ashes of a dying world. And the people in it had been changed by ancient energies pulled out from the earth and they'd gained the power of the Māori gods.
Right. So, good. Well, that's what I was going to ask you about. Now, firstly, this is called This Land, isn't it? So the project is about to hit Kickstarter and we're going to talk about that. It's called This Land. Now, but you have used, I'm guessing, quite a lot of... mythology from your part of the world in this, is that right?
Yeah, I did. I didn't know a lot, which was really funny because as I we were talking before, when I came over here, I knew more of when I had to do the citizenship test, I knew more about the UK than most people.
It's movies about King Arthur and all that sort of stuff, isn't there? You know, it's not so much about New Zealand, I suppose.
No,
yeah,
not at all. And growing up, New Zealand was, you know, one of the colonies, and we're pretty ingrained into the English history and stuff. You know, we get BBC is basically our TV1 back there.
Oh, okay.
And, you know, all it is British stuff being shoved down your throats all the time. And I didn't actually learn any New Zealand history
till my last year at high school when it was an option. So it was really weird. So I did a lot of digging up and looking at what was about, and about the same time Moana came out on the screen and everyone loved that.
Right.
And then I sort of looked at stuff like what the Saltire had done.
Okay, so Saltire's another Scottish-based company who did they do a sort of a folk hero, don't they, I suppose?
Yeah, they do, and they lean in on it, and it's quite successful with the schools up here, and they've had a pretty good run.
Okay.
And I looked at it as an opportunity. Well, how can I bring something that's truly New Zealand and Kiwi to the world? And and came up with this land.
Good on you, man. Now, what's it about? So there's a bunch of characters in there. I have to say, it reminds me of an Ed McGuinness book. It's very sort of bombastic and action based, isn't it? You know.
Yeah. So it's got layers and layers and layers, but at the surface, it's a simple story about a young woman who has to make a decision whether or not she's going to lead a god who has returned to the earth to find the god Maui, who was left behind to protect the people of the earth.
Okay.
So it's playing with existing myths and legends, honoring them, but putting them in a new setting in a new world where you can still learn a bit, some pieces about the real history, but creating its own thing as well.
Oh, that's nice, man. That's good. Do you reach back to New Zealand much about it as well? Have you got it into comic shops back there, or got any plans to?
Yeah, so that's quite good timing, because this week I've been talking to 6 or 7 shops back home,
right,
and they're all keen to jump on board and have a slice of it, which is fantastic. Comic shops and comic and cartoons back home, so it's really weird. It's evolved in a couple of ways. So the comic book scene or the cartooning scene in New Zealand is very alternative.
Okay.
You don't get your standard superheroes or anything. There's 3 or 4 guys, Roger Landridge, who lives in the UK.
Yeah.
He's probably the most famous one. Then you've got Michael Mulopola, who is a Samoan Kiwi out of Auckland. He's drawn for WWE magazine,
right,
and WWE comics. He's also a pro wrestler and New Zealand's number one Tekken player. He's done some pinups. He's done some pinups for the book.
And, oh, nice! Oh, cool.
And a couple of other Kiwi artists have contributed in some pinups and some design work. So all the design work and all the Maori design work, like the motifs and the logos and the facial tattoos and stuff, have all been done by what we call whakapapa. So people of the land. So,
oh wow, okay.
It's we'd be very, very careful, because if you've seen stuff, classic one is X-Men character called Kiwi Black,
right?
Believe it or not, it was a Chuck Austin run,
right? Okay,
and
right.
He introduced this character called Kiwi Black, and such a cliche, the wrong facial tattoos, just awful,
right?
So the last thing I wanted is to present the people of this land and the cultures from New Zealand the wrong way. So what we've done is, all the design work's been done by Kiwis, and but the main series artist is actually Polish, and his name is PR Dedelis.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that, because you do a bit of drawing yourself, but you farmed it out to him to do, have you? You know?
Yeah. I tried to draw.
I've seen you drawing at the drink and draw. You can draw. Yeah, but I get you.
Yes, but that's the drink.
Yeah. How did you find him, dude?
So it was just a pretty much a global search, because I started this back in 2016, and it wasn't until 2019 we actually got running. And I'd seen some of his work, and an Australian contact of mine, Stephen Cock, he had worked with him. And I was chatting to Stephen about, getting into libraries in Australia and bits and pieces. I was doing all my, before I started the book, I researched everything and all the markets and stuff.
Okay.
I went to my brother's wedding in Melbourne and stopped off in Singapore and stopped off in Melbourne. And I asked them what books are selling, what's great. And everyone came back with manga and kids. So
okay,
anything that could
right.
appeal to them. So I tried to, so I did all that. And Stephen Cock put me in touch with PR, and PR is just an absolute machine. And if I could, he's knocked out all 5 issues. They're already inked.
Oh,
and,
nice. Okay.
This Kickstarter basically will any funds from that will pay for the colours for 3, 4, 5. So issue 2's done as well.
Nice work. So, yeah. It definitely lends itself to a series, doesn't it? It's not a one-off for people who are thinking about it. This is a series, isn't it? Of books. And that's a good shout. 5 issues is nice as well.
I've got a bit of pride in what I want to do, and I wanted to make it the best that we could possibly do. So, you know, we've got pros in colouring with Liza Buenaventura. She is from, I'm going to get this wrong. I've done it. I've said this before because I get the countries mixed up. Yeah. Liza, she's done work for Scout Comics and Xenoscope.
Oh, nice.
Alterna.
Okay.
And damn it. Right. I'm going to pass because she's from Southeast Asia. And if I say the name of the place, I'll get it wrong.
But she's a marvelous colorist is what we're saying. That's what we need to know, my friend. Yeah.
And Hassan Otsmani Alao is on the letters.
Oh, he's doing the letters. Oh, nice work. Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's a very vibrantly coloured book, isn't it? The characters in it are almost, there's almost like a colour coding to them. He's got a very red character, haven't you? Appears on the cover. And, which is probably why it reminds me a little bit of sort of McGuinness's Red Hulk stuff. You know, that.
Absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So that's pretty much issue one. So issue one is based in a territory that, I don't really want to give away the ghost too much, but every tribe in New Zealand now has developed certain powers and abilities based on the area where they live.
Yeah.
So for the Left for Breath from New Zealand, you can go to the mountain, go snowboarding, and then surfing in the same day.
Right. Okay. Right.
You know, you've seen Lord of the Rings. The landscape of Lord of the Rings, pretty much the same as New Zealand. So this is a heightened thing. Auckland, for example, has 100 dormant volcanoes in the surrounding area of 1.5 million people. So what happens if they all go off? So hence, Auckland now is basically a living, breathing volcano, and the people around it have the powers and abilities to manipulate heat and flame and steel.
Yeah, I get you.
So issue one is based in Axeland, which was formerly known as Auckland.
Nice.
So as the story goes on, the scenery will definitely change, and we'll go to some pretty crazy places.
Yeah, it's good, man. I think it's well worth a look for people. I think that if you're looking for sort of a fun adventure comic that's got a little bit of a touchstone to some history and to some mythology and to somewhere we're not used to reading about, I think is the point. I think it's good. I think it's a great thing. Yeah,
it's not one of those things that forces it down your throat. If you want to learn,
I get you completely. Yeah.
At the start of it, you've got there's a little coda at the start that says if you go to the MaoriDictionary.com, you can put these words in, and then you can hear how they're spoken. I mean, for years, I remember growing up with Asterix and Tintin, and they were, you know, there was Latin words in that. I knew Latin before I knew Maori. It was weird.
We did, didn't we, from that? Yeah.
Crazy. Yeah. So, you know, just having things there, just as a norm, it's great.
Yeah, I think it's a good idea, man. Right, so it goes live. By the time you hear this, it will have just gone live. So this is likely to go out Monday or the following Monday. Is it going to be up for a month, is it? Is it a month?
It's going to be up for the month of February.
Good stuff. And so where can people find it, dude? And where can people find you?
So www.aruhacomics.com.
Better spell that for us. Yeah.
A-R-O-H-A Comics.
Lovely. And where are you on social media?
Yeah. I'm on the Mark Abnett on Twitter. Aroha Comics Mark Abnett on Instagram and Facebook, and I've just joined Reddit, which is an interesting hellhole, and I missed out on the shares the other day, but never mind.
People swear by Reddit, you know. People swear it's a great place, and it's full of all the techies at my work. They're all on Reddit nonstop, but I know what you mean.
And everyone would have heard this, but I've been told that I have to do a sea shanty on the live launch on Sunday night. So come back and check that. Because she's sea shanties now. Apparently that's a thing. So who
is that
the guessed?
Coolness now, is it? Oh, okay.
It's a whole other rabbit hole, mate. These young people, I don't know.
I know. Yeah, I was listening to that 30 years ago, but there you go. Good stuff. Okay, so head over to, say it to me again.
Aroha.
Look it up, A-R-O-H-A on Kickstarter. Go and back it. I'm sure you make your figures,
this
man.
Land.
I know.
Yeah.
This land. Go and have a look
just
for this land.
Yeah, Google this land on Kickstarter and you'll be there straight away.
Brilliant stuff. Nice one, mate. Crack in. And I'm sure we'll catch up on the next Kickstarter, which will be mid-project, won't it? So it's not a bad one to pop along to. We can have a chat again on the Kickstarter, on the drink and draw. So that'll be good.
Absolutely.
Nice one. Thanks, dude.
Cheers, mate. Thank you.
There you go. It's good. Look at us. Two interviews in a podcast. That's your money. It's your money getting your money back there, aren't you?
Yay. For a free podcast.
Free podcast.
Yes. So it's more than value for money because you've got loads of comics to...
Feel the girth.
Yeah. Yes. That that's not the way I'd describe the amount of content you get in this show.
But long and thin may go in, short and thick does a trick.
So what comics would we like to... Sometimes, as you can tell, folks, I just ignore him. What comics are we going to recommend to our...
Go on, you go first, V. Go on, V. Go on.
All right, okay. I'm going to go for an issue two of a comic that I've already sort of recommended. And it is issue two of Homesick Pilots from Image Comics, written by Dan Waters, art by Casper Wingard. And is it
Watters?
I think it might be. I think I get it wrong, and I apologize I apologize to both of you for murdering your second name. So you'll have to come on the show and talk to us and tell us off. But in all seriousness, issue two is more of the same. I mean, those who don't know what the synopsis of this series is, basically, like, haunted houses are like giant mechs. And what does that mean? You just got to read the comic to find out. Issue two continues to explore the story set up in issue one, which is all based around like a three-piece punk band called the Homesick Pilots, which is it's just a great title, and also the font on the cover is just beautiful. All the covers look
amazing. That's the name of a punk band.
Yeah.
It sounds a bit more like a alt folk band to me.
No.
Shouldn't they be something like Snot or something like that if they're a punk band?
No, there's already a band called Snot.
Yeah, but
there was. But
Anal Fissure. Yeah, that'd be my punk band.
Oh God. I mean, that killed it, didn't it? That killed this show.
That killed it.
Yeah. But basically, this follows the story of Amy, who has just been... I don't want to talk about the story, because I think right now, because it's issue two and there's a lot of surprises in this, the main character Amy has made a connection with a haunted house, which is quite interesting. But this one also brings it more into the steps away from the horror aspect, and there is still the classic haunted house sort of horror aspects to this sort of things. But this also has some. It becomes really sort of comic booky, and you know, there's strange creatures. The ghosts become something. It's not just spooky children in a hallway. There's real weird things going on in this that almost become almost like creatures that we've been talking, you know, from what we've been talking about this week. You know, the far out there sort of creature designs and stuff like that.
Okay.
There's a lucky horseshoe, which has been basically a lot of items have been taken from this haunted house. And Amy now has to try and search and go and find them because the house wants them back. But do these items want to go home again? Mixed in amongst that, you've got some wonderful character work, wonderful character writing, some beautifully sort of paced, because it is a character piece. You have some flashbacks to the three main characters sort of as they sort of get to know each other before jumping into the here and now. And I think that's one of the things I like about it as well. It's about the main characters, if that makes sense. You've got all these crazy, yep, over-the-top things going on, but at the core of it is a story that I want to find out more about. I said when I read issue one, this is definitely going on my to read. You know, I needed a couple of new series to get my teeth into. Yeah. And this looks like more of the same. I know on sort of Twitter or online and stuff, a lot of people, you probably see the covers about quite a lot, and the covers are interesting to try and, you know, by looking at the design of it, what is this about?
And so who's the publisher again, V?
This is Image. It's Image. Image.
Okay.
Image.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. So it is, I mean, whether it's Image or not, these creators put out hugely professional looking work anyway. You know, it's amazing stuff when these two get together. Was it Limbo? That was the book they did together as well, wasn't it?
Ah, that's right. Yeah, I got that. Yeah.
And they, I mean, we've talked about them before, but you know, they're definitely, it's just amazing stuff. I'm very much on board with this title. Great designs, great character work, wonderful colours. The colours are real. It leans into the sort of neons and like characters aren't necessarily just straight up. You know, flesh tones. There's like, you know, there's some blue tints, there's some green tints, there's some neons, there's some magentas. Knowing the sort of color palette that that Dan Butcher likes. Yes, I think
my cup of tea.
I think you'll definitely get a kick out of this series, Dan. I think you'll really like this. It's really well put together as well, but doesn't take away from the storytelling at its core. So if you like action, if you like adventure, if you like mystery, and if you just like a quite unique haunted house story, Homesick Pilots is definitely one to latch onto. I'm going to get the collection, but fuck it, I'm going to buy it in issues as well, because it's got me now. I tried the issue 2, and issue 2 was like, yeah, I think they're just going to keep going more the same. So there you go, that's mine.
Nice, cool. D-Man?
I'm going to recommend a Kickstarter I got through this week from Dan Harris, Inky's Adventures.
Nice.
Comics based on the Inktober 2020 prompts. I was just laughing my ass off at this. It's absolutely fantastic.
Dan's got a great sense of humour, hasn't he?
Yeah,
it's really good. Tons of pop culture references, some real cheeky gags in here that are like, I'd say our cup of tea.
Right.
I gave this to my son, so look, you like this, and read it through. I should have maybe read it a little first and checked it, but he was cackling, just absolutely loved it. There's a couple of times he went off to read it and then he'd come back like a couple of minutes later and say, look at this, and show me a bit. There's a bit where the chap in question is doing a pottery class and he looks around and everyone's like made of vase or something interesting, and he's done a pair of boobs on the and obviously Dexter's laughing at that. It's real chunky little book, square size, just under A5. It's just such a lovely little item.
Square size books, they're just a real nice sort.
Yeah,
but you know, we said similar about like these the Hauntings recently. But,
yeah, we did, didn't we? I like that. Yeah. I like that format. Mm. Yeah.
So this is like three panels, so three page. So every page is a panel. You get and every strip's three pages. So you get set up, bang, delivery on the last one. And then it goes into the next one. And it's just such a lovely piece. And he's got packed with stickers. Dan did a commission. I think he's done that for everyone. It might have been if you had an early access or early backing, you got like a sketch with it, which he's done. And yeah, stickers, everything. I was like very, very impressed. He's put out a fantastic product. I think there we go. If you go to patreon.com/Dan Harris, you can find him on there. He's also on Instagram and Twitter at bearsark_artist. Pick him up there. So someone putting their contact details in the back of the book where they're readily accessible. Such a great move.
Yeah. Dan's one of those guys who we've been friends with since, well, before the show started, really, but certainly since the show began. And he's consistently put out comics over all that time, and I kind of admire him for that, really. You know, it's good stuff.
And he's very prolific on his Patreon. He does a lot of comics.
Yeah, I hear that. Yeah.
Sort of almost, they do end up in the world, in the sort of the open world eventually, but he delivers to the patrons first, doesn't he, really? He's very much.
Yeah.
He's loyal to the following he's got, which is brilliant to see.
Good stuff, man.
Yeah. Tony, take it away.
Mine is another Kickstarter, actually, that I got through. I got the digital copy through, and I think I'm due the print copy next week. Do you ever, like, look back on your Kickstarters and think, why did I pledge on that one? I can't even remember who that person is. You know, it's like one of those sort of things.
Yeah.
This is what happened here. It turns out the creator is from London, and I'm guessing I've probably met him at some point or other, but, you know, it doesn't ring any bells. I'm sorry, Daniel. But it's Sympathy for the Devil by Daniel Bristow Bailey. It's got first up the cover. The cover is brilliant. So the cover is a crowd of people. Every single face in that crowd is drawn as an individual and looks different, which I really admire. Looking there, and they've all got halos. It turns out they're all angels. Amidst them is a character running through in a black suit who hasn't got a halo, just sort of pushing his way through the crowd. And it's a really nice image. I have to say, I think the font on the title isn't quite as readable as it perhaps should be. I'll stick it in the chat in a minute for you guys so you can see what it looks like. But it's a good little cover and very well colored and everything, and straight off the bat, good stuff.
Yeah.
So I mean the font perhaps isn't quite enough Sympathy for the Devil.
It's a little hard to read. At a glance.
It's a bit like an album, like a metal band album.
Like a script font.
Yeah. But it's good. It's not another. So it's basically an irreverent retelling of the Genesis myth. you know, the Christian Genesis myth, and it opens on a big conference table with angels sitting around the table, and one of them, and what he does, you know, the badges that they have in Shaun of the Dead, they say hello, my name is Shaun, or something like that. You know, that sort of joke thing. They some of the he identifies some of the angels by doing a little arrow and showing their badge, and this one it says hello, I'm Lucifer, and in brackets says minor angel. And at the top of the table is this huge sort of Modoc-sized head, which is God. And God's asking Lucifer about some ideas he has about reworking dinosaur DNA. And Lucifer sort of says, oh, yeah, I've got a plan around that. I think we're going to make them smaller and lighter and they can fly. And he basically explains how he's going to turn dinosaurs into birds. Michael is another angel at the table. We know Michael is he the one with the flaming sword in Chris? He's certainly got a flaming sword in this, but he's sort of God's,
I think,
you know,
so,
he's
yeah,
like, yeah, he's that sort of character. Yeah. But he's a bit of an arsehole in this, and it's and he starts asking questions like, what's to stop them shitting everywhere? And do they just crap when they're flying or what? And he gets in a, he gets, and Lucifer gets a bit dogpiled in this meeting. You know, we've all been in those stupid meetings where we come up with an idea and everyone goes, that's shit, and everyone's oh, I think it's shit too. Yeah. You know, it's like that, you know, sort of thing. And he gets asked about if he's considered the HR problems and all this sort of thing, risk assessments. And so he heads off for a meeting where he meets Azrael, and they sit on the top of this wall and get pissed from a hip flask. And another angel appears and just says to him, you need to let go of the dinosaur thing, dude. And then Lucifer says, one day someone is going to dig up all these dinosaur bones and think, what the fuck happened to them? Turns out God has got a legal department and they're redrafting the terms and conditions for the Garden of Eden. That's class. I like just little flashes like that. And Lucifer goes, and then a memo comes out. So there's a memo on one side of the page, and it indicates that Michael has completely and utterly nicked his idea for birds. So Lucifer goes to confront him, and it all sort of kicks off. They have an argument that escalates, gets heated, and then God calls everyone up. He says, right, come on, everyone in the main courtyard, and we'll talk about what, you know, this is the end of day six, which is obviously the day the earth was created and everything was finished. And because it doesn't go particularly well, I won't spoil it, Lucifer gets sent to hell and doesn't get to go on the day seven day out when all the buses turn up to take them on their day seven day out, which I kind of have been like a, you know, guilt-ridden Catholic schoolboy. I kind of dig this shit. You know, I like the fact that we're poking holes in this ridiculous story. It's black and white. It's very well drawn. The image of heaven is like it's in a sort of Mesopotamian town or city, you know, full of arches and, you know, grand staircases and balconies and anterooms and stuff like that. But crammed into the middle of it are tables with PCs and them all sitting around, you know, typing out memos and, you know, getting through all the sort of red tape that you would in any ordinary office in London or wherever it's going to be. And it's just fun for that. It really is fun. It's full of, you know, HR problems and, you know, you don't get on with your boss and you have a row and, you know, it's a bit between The Life of Brian and The Office, I suppose. It's sort of somewhere between that. A bit of Douglas Adams, maybe, you know.
Tying into the title by putting you in this position of feeling sorry for someone that's got work in that kind of environment.
Yeah, he's our protagonist. He's the only sane voice. You know, he's a bit wound up by it all, but he's the one who's sort of pointing out, this is just shit, you know.
We've all been there.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, we've all been that lone voice and we think we're that rebel. But, you know, this time it turns out to be Lucifer who gets sent to hell. Yeah. I think maybe if it was, and this is purely if it was me writing it, I would have taken it a bit further. I think...
Well, isn't that a surprise?
Yes, unsurprisingly. But it's still polite. I think, I don't know, I think, you know, there's no... When Michael draws his flaming sword and, you know, goes for this, it doesn't quite go that far for me, but I think it's a great read. I if it was just a one-off, I'd go, okay, well, that was cool. That's quite fun. But I noticed on the back page, there's the next issue is coming and it's called, what's it called? The Garden of Eden or something. Yeah, it's just called Eden. Sympathy for the Devil Part 2. And I think, right, well, I like this now. I'm warming to this more because it's really going somewhere. It's built up the characters. We've got him as this sort of, I don't know, office-bound rebel rather than this sort of, you know, fiery satanic, you know, angel cast into hell. It's just this sort of irate bloke in an office.
How does that affect how you think about it then? Like you say, if it was one and done, you would be like, yeah, that was really good, I enjoyed that. But do you find you like it more, knowing that there's more to come.
I think so, because I think they kind of introduce a lot of stuff and it doesn't quite play through, which is, okay. I mean, I joke about me taking it to the extremes, but I would have played through with it a bit more, give it a golfing analogy. Do you know what I mean? I would have,
yeah,
I would have taken it to a more of a conclusion if it was a one-off. But I think when you got the second volume coming, I think I'm on board for this. I think it's good. I think it's a nice idea. It's a well thought out, you know, there's obviously a lot of thought gone into it and there's some really detailed art gone into it. And I think, yeah, I'm going to definitely back, part two. I think Gareth Brooks is somehow a friend of his. I think someone had to talk him out of writing it all in Hebrew. So I mean, this dude's quite interesting. I quite like this. Have a look at it. I think you can. I think very soon you'll be able to buy it. If you go to Bristow Bailey on Twitter or Daniel Bristow Bailey on Instagram, you can find it. Just look up Daniel Bristow Bailey on Kickstarter and there'll be links there, I'm sure. The Kickstarter closed on Halloween, so that's pretty good timing, I think.
Yeah,
I think that's a good timing for a book, especially of this detail to come through.
Yeah.
Like I say, cracking cover, which will show up well on a shelf, I think. You go into Gosh, you'll spot that straight away amongst all the other small press books, I would say. Yeah, good stuff. There you go, small one.
Nice.
That sounds awesome.
Lots of great and different comics to check out this week to add to your wish lists in our ongoing efforts to make you rue the day we're ever born because you're broke from buying all these amazing comics.
You're not going to do anything else with your money, are you? Let's face it.
Yeah, don't spend it on takeaways. Be healthier. Buy a book.
Yeah, buy a comic.
Yeah. Because you're not going to eat your graphic novels. And if you do, you're a savage.
Don't phone that bloke up who delivers weed to your house in his car. He's breaking the law. Just buy a comic.
Yeah, totally.
Get high on life.
I spotted some bloke up my road did that the other day. Just bold as brass. I've seen his car a couple of times. He just drives around the area delivering. I must see. Quite a good business idea, delivering weed to your house.
Yeah.
Well, I guess Uber are branching out.
Yeah.
That is satirical. That is in no way.
Yes, we don't. Drugs are bad.
Drugs are bad. Drugs for mugs. Yeah. Smokes are jokes.
Yeah. Anyway, comics are our drugs.
Yep. And we are high on them this week because there's been loads of awesome comics talking.
Got that all right. I think that went all right.
But if you do want to get in touch with us and say, no, you didn't get out of that at all, you can email us, awesomecomicspod@gmail.com. Likewise, if you've got any comic events or, you know, any comic initiatives or anything, especially like in these times where you're paying it forward through the medium of comics or doing something to help other people, we want to know about it and we want to shout out about it. So definitely get in touch with us about that. Follow us on Twitter @TheAwesomePod, where we will be, who knows what we'll be doing, announcing the next guest, talking about Lord knows what, maybe asking.
Yeah, a few guests in lined up, haven't we?
Yeah.
Yeah, we have.
On the rundown to 300, but you'll find out. We've got plans for that, but you'll find out more about that at a later date. If you do the Book of Faces, go to facebook.com/awesomecomicspodcast. And like we've mentioned it a couple of times this episode, but the community group on Facebook, Awesome Comics Talk, is a great place to be. No matter who you are, where you are, if you just want to find a forum of people that just want to talk about comics, or whether it be making comics, process, conventions, just anything, there's a great community of people on there talking about stuff and recommending stuff, and we highly I mean, we only post a couple of things on there ourselves, don't we? It's everyone else that makes it what it is. So
busy on there recently, actually. A lot of people coming in and not filling out their details and getting knocked back, but other than that, it's been good.
As we say, there's a few admins now on it. All you've got to do is answer a couple of questions and you're in, and if you listen to the show, you're going to be in anyway. Thank you for listening to us, whether it's on the website awesomecomics.podbean.com. if you listen to us on Apple Podcasts, subscribe and leave a review. It helps get the word out about this show and more people discover all of these amazing books that we talk about and we discover for ourselves, so that you can discover for them later. Also, we're on loads of other networks like, I don't know, Amazon Music, Spotify, Stitcher, Podnose, Podknife. What are the ones, Tony?
We're on Pod Looks Like a Kicked Over Trifle.
Another joke we'll never explain. Because you seriously don't want us to. But in all seriousness, thank you very much for listening, folks. We hope you enjoyed this week's episode. Plenty more awesomeness to come, as we head on to episode 300. And in the next few months, we'll line up some great guests and some great topics to talk about. So look forward to that. We'll see you next week. Well, see you. Well, we don't hear them, do we?
I mean, we might see them on the drinking draw.
Drinking draw, baby.
Yeah, hope to see you there. And we look forward to whatever happens in the world of comics this week. But whatever it is, we hope you stay happy, healthy, wherever you are, safe, and you're doing okay. And hopefully we've made you laugh over the past couple of hours and probably made you a little bit more...
Made ourselves laugh, so that's fine.
That's all that matters.
Yeah.
Egomaniacs. Unlike you lovely people. So, have a brilliant week. Read loads of comics. Keep making your comics. And from Dan, Tony and myself, have a brilliant week. And what do they do, guys?
Stay awesome.
Stay awesome.
You've got to get on point, Dan.
That wasn't on point. No, what are you talking about?
Dan's doing the 80s game show. He's just going to get longer with that every week.
He's like the Mike Reed of the podcast.
I fire it off, and then when Tony comes in, then I finish at the same time. That's the technique.
Is that what you think you just did?
Mate, this is a fucking art form. It's not easy, you know.
The readers aren't, the listeners aren't complaining. It's fine.
Yeah, they love this. The better people who write into me and say they love that bit. Well, to be fair, nobody has, but you know.
Nobody has.
Well, maybe that says it all, doesn't it, really?
Do something different next week. Let's say something different next week.
Oh, we did something different last week.
Last week, didn't we? Yeah. Oh, let's change it up.
Yeah, cool. Let's mix it up. Let's change our brand. Oh, for God's sake. Bye, everyone.
Bye.
See ya.